relief first that you were picked, and then it's very. It was a grueling process, and there's a lot. You know, even if you're already in the government, there's a lot of paperwork to fill out. So there's that, and then going back through your whole career and thinking about what were the important parts, and what makes you qualified for the position.
Well, and let's start there. Why did you want this job? This is a big job, a very gets a lot of attention, a lot of pressures. Why would you want to do this?
Well, maybe that's the reason to have the job. And it's a great opportunity to do some things that I think are really important. GSA and Federal Acquisition Service in particular really does impact a lot of the federal government in the things that they purchase, making available tools that will help agencies meet their missions. And to be able to really impact that and do some things that will really be positive both for the Federal Acquisition Service and for our customers is really one of the most important reasons for wanting this job and moving forward in a way that'll help the agency.
You've seen this organization, you've in fact been involved with both the two organizations that created the Federal Acquisition Service. Even looking back, what is the challenge in front of the organization now that it has been merged? What's your big challenge now?
Well, I think the last couple of years we spent getting the organization together as FAS. I think going forward, we have a couple of challenges. One is really looking at this term operational excellence in what we do. So it's taking our programs and making them more effective. Working on the pricing on the schedules, working on our customer facing tools, working on our industry facing tools and systems to make sure that they make the organization work better and that we can be much more effective internally. The second challenge that I think we have is in our communication. And again, here, it's reaching out first to our employees about what we're going to be doing and making sure that they're on board and getting the information from them on how we can do a better job. Then reaching out to the customer so that they understand what we're doing and how we're going to help them and what's available to them from the Federal Acquisition Service. And then working with, reaching out to the industry as well. And then lastly, our stakeholders. I think in all areas, FAS hasn't been doing as good a job as it needs to in terms of telling its story and being the one that tells its story by itself rather than other people tell the story for us.
Is there a sense that, part of what you've had to gone through over the last couple months is almost a baselining where we are today so you know where you want to be. And is there a sense that the relationship, for example, with DOD, is it just not telling the story, or was it not having the tools? It's been a difficult relationship to get reacclimated between GSA and DOD. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think that's emblematic of some of the challenges we face. I think that for a while we were too inwardly focused. So now we're reaching out to customers like DOD, and we're doing some great things with them, like the COMSATCOM contract, working with DISA, and working together in concert with them to put out a product that we can both use and actually will be available to the rest of the federal government. So I think building that confidence and that the things that we do here are important for them and useful for them in meeting their mission. I think we've had a resurgence of our relationship with DOD, and I think we're continuing to move forward in a positive manner with them.
Do you have a sense that the Federal Acquisition Service is, as you say, we used to be focused on internal stuff. Is the focus now on customer?
I think we're going to have a greater emphasis on customer than we've had. We're working on some of our customer-facing tools. For instance, we're moving forward with some updates to Advantage, which I think are going to be great for the customer. I think, of course, our biggest service that we provide are the schedules. And Advantage is really the customer catalog for the schedules and some of our other products, by the way. So we're going to be upgrading that to make it a lot more user-friendly, give it better, there'll be better descriptions, ability for them to see price comparisons much more easily. So when they come to GSA in the future, they'll be getting better tools to find the things that they need. Another thing we just did was in our Schedules e-library actually publish what we call contracts online, all of the terms and conditions for all of our 18,000 schedule holders. a great thing to deal with, transparency, and allow customers to actually see all of the terms and conditions in all of our contracts. A very big project, but very useful to the customer.
Talk a little bit about the schedules, because we've seen a little bit of sag in the growth of the schedule contracts. I think people sometimes forget what an enormous the schedule contract,
yeah,
just enormous and such a powerful tool for most federal agencies.
Yes, I think people tend to focus too narrowly on the Schedule 70, the IT schedule. I think if you look at the schedules across the board, in many of the schedules outside of the IT schedule, we see double-digit growth in some of those areas. MOBIS, for instance, and some of the other environmental schedule, and some of those where we're seeing 6-12% growth in some of those. We know that the Schedule 70 has been a little bit flat, but there are also competing internal contracts like Alliant that has really picked up and taken some of that work away and has been successful. We're also reinvigorating those schedules. We're doing some things that will help the contracting officers that award the schedules do a better job. Like I said, we're giving the users better tools like Advantage, eBuy, and some of the other e-tools we have to use the schedules, and that they're going to see some changes in terms of our attention to pricing and better pricing and the ability to do the comparisons that will make those tools much more effective for them. And the last piece of that is one of the things that we've heard from our customers is that the schedules are difficult to use.
Mm.
And I think what we've taken from that is that they don't understand exactly how to best use the schedules to their advantage. So one of the things that we'll be rolling out this fall is a whole set of training at the Federal Acquisition Institute to be able to understand how to utilize the schedules better and to leverage them to do their work.
And talk a little bit about, because the side that I hear a lot from industry side are the audits, the getting things, updating schedule contracts easily. Where does that play, and what role? Talk a little bit about those issues.
Sure. And there you've identified two issues. Let's talk about updating the schedules. One of the things that we're working on here is something called Enterprise Acquisition System, which is basically our electronic contracting system, which will cover all of the kinds of contracting we do, which includes the schedules. So there will be some upgrades that will actually make that whole process electronic. So it'll be much more efficient for the contracting officers, which will allow us to do a better job in awarding the contracts, be able to do it much more efficiently and quickly, so that products will show up on the schedules much faster. The second piece you talked about there is the IG audits and what they do. And I think one of the things that people oftentimes misconstrue is that we work with the IG in supporting the award of those contracts. So when you hear about the contract awards, those are done in order to assist the contracting officer in terms of what kind of pricing, the data that they gather and actually manipulate and work with to figure out what people are charging commercial customers and how the government should then price the products on the schedule. And that, you know, I think people look at the $4 billion figure, which is often talked about in terms of cost avoidance. That is built into the price that actually gets on the award. So those cost avoidance figures are actually figured into the contract price awarded, and that the IG is actually working with us to get to that right price for the customers. And when they do those kind of audits, it's actually they're not random. You know, we're looking at the potential contracts where that audit will do the best good for us, where there's, you know, the most bang for the buck, if you will, with them going out and completing an audit.
And I mean, I know the concern has been things like the Sun situation, and I'm specifically not asking you to comment on that, but we've seen situations where particularly the post-audit always been a big issue for particularly the industry community.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, right now the IG, as it sits right now, has pre-award audit responsibilities and limited post-award audit. But, you know, the IG performs a very important function to hold back on fraud, waste, and abuse. And, you know, this is a big contract. You know, we're talking about almost 10% of what the government buys through the schedule,
yeah.
And it's really important to have them by our side to make sure that the right things are happening under the schedule, and we can be sure that the companies are living up to their obligations.
I want to talk a little bit about acquisition personnel, because it seems like we hear a lot of strains on the acquisition personnel. Give me your sense as to where the acquisition personnel stands right now. What are the challenges that you face in that area?
Well, I think there's a few. First, you know, right off the bat, there's too few of them. And then because of that, how do we use most effectively the few that we have to ensure that they're doing, you know, working on the things that are most important to the federal government?
Yeah.
Secondly, I think there's a challenge with the training that people have. The acquisition field is so, you know, so dynamic. There's a lot of changes coming out. So keeping people up to date on what they should be doing, the new vehicles out there, the new, you know, new ways to deal with contracting, the new systems out there. I think everybody's, you know, moving into a Web 2.0 sort of environment in contracting. So, you know, there's a lot of change for them in order to figure out what to do. And then the last piece I really think about with the contracting officers is that, you know, that they've been sort of picked on, if you will. You know, they've been put in almost an untenable environment where there's too few of them doing too much work, and then, you know, people come in and judge them on the backside. So I think
a lot
really
of hindsight.
Need to stand behind them, yeah. and to tolerate a little bit of risk in them moving forward and making decisions and empowering them to make the right decisions, and then standing behind them when they do.
And that seems like one of the real opportunities that you have, is you can give people a little bit of cover to say, okay, we're going to figure out where the reasonable risk is. And when we do that, we're going in eyes wide open, so we know we're doing that. And we're doing it because there are important reasons. There's potential gain here.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the, you know, if we're going to have some innovation and change, we're going to have to take some risk. But calculated risk with a good tolerance.
Smart
there.
Risk.
Right.
Yeah.
And we need to stand behind people when they move out and take some of that risk and try to do some new things. And I think that's part of my challenge here is to let people know what kind of risks are going to be tolerated and what kind of risks they should be taking in order to change acquisition as we know it.
You were up on Capitol Hill a couple weeks ago talking about the multiple award contracts all over the place and particularly the plethora of them. How big of an issue is that for you, and how do you go about dealing with it?
Well, I think the first thing is that I don't think GSA is really wanting to be a monopoly or the only game in town. I think we've always learned from our competition, and I think, you know, I'm not really scared of the competition. I think it's a good thing for us, and it keeps us on our toes. It keeps us moving, keeping the contracts fresh, working on new ways to do things, innovating. Changing to meet the customer's demands. So I think that's a good thing. However, you know, there is a limit to the competition, and when you look at the acquisition workforce constraints, everybody having their own contract vehicles is really something that's probably not good from the government-wide perspective. And I think Dan Gordon in his testimony had a really smart way of approaching this and trying to get a good control over how much is too much competition, and really looking at where a little more oversight needs to happen so that all the government agencies make good decisions about what's in the best interest of their agency and the federal government.
And is there, at what point is there too much competition? I mean, I know there's, you know, why does NASA have a contract? How much is too much?
Well, I think that's a decision that OMB and Congress are going to have to take.
Above my pay grade.
I would like to see less than there currently is,
yeah.
But I think some competition is very healthy for us and for the federal government.
Let's do a couple quick touch on a couple of them. Networks. How much of a we keep hearing behind agencies behind. Where do we stand on networks? Is there going to be another extension to the FTS contracts?
Well, on networks, two of the things we're seeing is that, you know, we're making significant progress in terms of what actually has been transitioned. I think we're we're at about 60% right now, and we continue to move ahead very quickly on that. The other piece of that is that although we're only at 60%, the rest of it appears to be well along in the pipeline, and we're going to get pretty close to meeting our deadline of next, I think it's next June or August, August of 2011.
Right.
So I think we're going to get pretty darn close to actually meeting it. So hopefully we won't have to do extensions, or maybe they may be limited.
Is the slowness here, the lag time, is it just people not procrastinating, frankly, saying, okay, we're putting it off until the last minute? Or is there something systemic that GSA can do to help folks get this done?
Well, I think what you've seen from Ed O'Hare and the folks over in the Networks program is that as they saw agencies increasingly have difficulty in the transition, they began to throw more resources at it. So there was more help for them. And each agency had their own constraints and issues. Some were moving toward a more transformative solution. Others, lacked some of the technical or contracting resources to move forward. Some were just plain procrastinating in this. But each agency had their own issues or, conflagration of many issues that were really holding them back from moving forward. This has always been a very terrifically difficult task to do. It wasn't just this contract transition. In many cases, it's all contract transitions are a difficult thing to do. But in this one, with the move of technology and telecommunications and data networks too, it was particularly difficult this time through.
I want to ask you a little bit about acquisition 2.0 and particularly the Better Buy project.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that ends up being worth the time spent? And I know there are a lot of bumps along the road as they've gone on so far. And my sense is a lot of lessons learned. Probably things didn't work out exactly the way everyone wanted. Give us your take on where this Better Buy project and this whole acquisition 2.0, where do we stand here?
Well, I think we've tried some things that we've learned from Better Buy. I think we're, Mary Davey and her group in the Assisted Acquisition Services are still pulling data off of there and trying to figure out which ones we could use. This is part of this participatory government that we go out and get more information from those we deal with, whether they be the customers or industry, and then try to bring them in and innovate in how we deliver our services. So I think more to come on that. But we're moving forward on that, and we'll see some new things that we're going to try too.
And you mentioned transparency earlier. It also seems that there's some transparency aspects here that might come through.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that I think they struggled with too, is how do you change the way we communicate with industry while we're actually doing a procurement, and how do we use Gov2O tools to actually communicate process, progress, change in the procurement, gather information up front. So, I mean, I think, Better Buy was a way to investigate a lot of those things. And quite frankly, I think industry struggled with some of this as well from their side, too.
Yeah. A fascinating project to watch. I want to give you an opportunity to speak both to your people and also to the industry folks out there and say whatever you want. Before we do that, let's just touch briefly on green. And I'm just going to leave it out there as green. Big issue on your plate, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think our administrator, Martha Johnson, has talked about is a zero environmental footprint. And for us, that means a lot of things. That means the way we do business internally, things like telework and unplugging our personal printers and using community printers in our buildings, how we work with industry in terms of greening the schedules, getting the right kinds of companies on the schedules, how we provide services to our customers. We have a carbon footprint tool that we've made available to customers for free.
Hmm.
So, I mean, we have, and then even taking that forward, how do we live our lives at home too? And we take some of those things we learn in the office and bring them home to be good environmental stewards in every phase of our lives. So there's a lot of work that we're going to be doing there.
How do you approach as a leader? You're now you're a big cheese. You're a top dog. You're a honcho. How do you approach leadership? How do you get people motivated? How do you deal with what's the Kemp leadership model?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things I've always tried to do is be a good listener to the people that work with me, and understand and have a little empathy about, you know, what they're facing and how they're trying to deal with their day-to-day issues, and then try to find solutions that are useful and good for everybody that people can get around and move forward with. But you know, part of that is making decisions too, and you know, we have a tough role to play here in the Federal Acquisition Service. We can't please everybody.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, we know no matter what decision we're going
to
make,
welcome to my world,
not going to be completely happy with it. So, you know, so part of that is, you know, reaching out, listening, getting the right information, then moving forward with a decision, and then getting people behind you and moving ahead. So I think that's worked for me in the past, and we're going to continue to work that way.
I want to give you 50,000 watts to speak both to your acquisition people and to your industry people. Of course, a big part of your constituency, maybe two different messages. But what do you say to them?
Well, I think, you know, the message that I have for them is, for our employees, we're going to set them up for success. We're to give them the tools they need to do a great job. For our customers and industry, we're going to move forward with operational excellence in all we do, and that means changing some of our systems, getting better at what we do. Third, on an innovation, really making FAST the government sustainability leader. We're going to be doing that a lot. And then finally, really communicating. We're going to be listening to our customers. We're going to be talking to our customers. We're going to be improving our vendor support center website for industry, so it really becomes a tool for them to understand where we're going, and then reaching out to our stakeholders. So that's going to be an important way in the way we do business from this point forward with the Federal Acquisition Service.
It's almost impossible to underestimate how important the Federal Acquisition Service is to GSA. You provide a lot of the things that allows GSA to do everything that it does. And it's an exciting job, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I'm just looking forward to all the challenges ahead and expect to do great things.